Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to American Conservative Radio. I am your host, Tracy Coyle. I hope you like our new bumper music. We'll see how that works out in the future. Our website is www.AmericanConservativeParty.org. I encourage you to visit there and see what we're all about. I have an extended version of the program tonight. There's just too much to cover in a half an hour. And we're going to invite callers to join us tonight, so if you're interested, our call-in number is 646-652-2828. I want to take a few minutes this evening and encourage you, if you haven't already done so, to send a few bucks to the Red Cross for their work in Louisiana and Texas after Hurricanes Gustav and Ike. A lot of people are hurting down there, and the Red Cross does some good work. Tonight we have a special guest. I would like to introduce you to a gentleman that I have had the honor to work with over the last several months. Sam Gallo came to the American Conservative Party with a lifetime of experience and several lifetimes worth of enthusiasm. I've tried not to damp it down too much, and he's taken on the challenge of working with people to get the state organizations up and running for the American Conservative Party. He has established the Louisiana Conservative Party, and comes to us tonight from his home in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, a place that's still working to deal with the aftermath of both hurricanes. Good evening, Sam. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for asking me. What can I do for you?
Sam, I'd like you to tell us how your hometown is doing and what the impressions were of how the state and the local governments handled both Gustav and Ike.
Well, as you know, we joke a lot about it, but we've had a lot of hurricanes over several centuries, I guess you'd say, and there's so many in my lifetime, I don't remember all their names, but this one was really quite something. Back in 1965, we had what we thought was our worst hurricane, but we're told this one was worse than that. We still have trash around that they haven't picked up, but that's not a negative. They told us in the paper today that there was enough cuttings of trees and trash and stuff that have already filled the dimensions of Tiger Stadium, which holds 92,000 people. But on balance, our governor and our mayor, I think, did a pretty good job. One thing that I was very pleased to see, as were most citizens, every day during the aftermath of the hurricane, the mayor and the governor got on at least a couple of times a day on our local TV, which is broadcast, you know, with rabbit ears when you lose your cable, and gave us a pretty good lowdown of where we were going and what was happening, what electricity we could expect, which, believe it or not, there's still, I think, 20-something thousand people in our area without electricity, and it would have been about a week and a half now. But on balance, Tracy, I think they all did a good job. I think the governor really excelled. No, he's a conservative, really a conservative. And he's a young man, but he's has a history of doing things in apple pie order. And when they don't happen that way, he gets quite upset. We had an instance in the paper. I hope I'm not rambling on too much.
No, a lot of people are, you know, you see the TV, you know, the national MSM, the mainstream media, you know, they find a person here or a person there that tells people a little bit about what's going on in their little place to use some kind of, you know, get some kind of idea going across what's there. But I think a lot of us, you know, we don't, especially people like I mean, I lived on the Gulf Coast for about 8 months, but it was outside of hurricane season.
Yeah.
We just don't understand necessarily what a hurricane is. I mean, we understand what it can be, but to live through one is an entirely different story.
It's kind of scary, and that's not to be melodramatic. But anyway, back on what our government was doing, the back on the city, one of the things that was done this time that was really enforced, we have a new mayor. He's in his first term, and he's doing a good job, and he appointed a police chief, Chief LaDuff. Chief LaDuff is a motorcycle police officer who got to be chief, and the citizenry here loves him. He's a black person, and he is loved across the board. The children think the world of him. Every time there's a parade, he's up front riding his motorcycle. He's the chief. He does not go to work in a suit. He goes to work in his police uniform, and he doesn't put up with anything. Well, when the curfew was announced, he's the one that set the stage, and I actually watched him when he said that we were going to have a curfew, and that he presented it this way. He says, you know, you can help me as the police chief in this curfew, because if you stay home, I know all you people are good people. And he said, if all the good people are indoors, he said, there's a pretty good chance arithmetically that the ones that are out and about are probably not the good people. And I tell you, it won the day, and it was a very, crime absolutely was almost non-existent during the hurricane.
Well, it sounds like he was pretty much saying, if he catches you out there, he's going to assume right off the bat, even if he doesn't see you doing something wrong, that you're in fact doing something wrong.
That's right. And
I think it's a great way of approaching things.
It was. That's the kind of person he is, and that's the kind of people we need in government. In fact, back on our governor, he also has a way of speaking that way. And it, as a conservative, it's the kind of talk I like to hear from a person in government. Give you a good illustration. As we conservatives know, when we talk about the individual being sovereign, being unique, well, it means that we're given each a talent of some kind. And when the hurricane was really thundering in, and it was pretty bad, there's a place in Louisiana called Grand Isle. It's a spit of land out into the Gulf that is something that somebody like Ernest Hemingway would have loved. It's fishing shacks, and people come from all over the world to go fishing. And when they were evacuating, and the people in Grand Island, they know when a hurricane's coming, you get out. So, I mean, it isn't any kind of a where you have to send the police in. They just leave. But unfortunately, what happened was there's only one road. The water came up so fast in the surge that 130 people, I remember the figure, got trapped. Well, when the governor was on television, and I watched this one myself personally, he said, and this is almost a quote, he said, if you hear my voice, he said, I want you to know that I give you permission to break into the state lab on Grand Isle or shelter. He said, but please don't make too much damage. And that was it.
Well, that's not, you know, I mean, I recall a lot of the discussion before the hurricanes, and they were basically saying there would be no shelter. If we tell you to get out, get out.
That's
and I
right.
know a little bit about Grand Isle. That thing is about 2 inches above the shoreline. I mean,
yeah.
You know, a hurricane come across there, and it just disappears for a while.
It's, you know, in a very quick digression, the Grand Isle is a place where when they, many years ago, when they started doing the rigs, they all go off pretty much in the Grand Isle area, and the liberals said, oh, this is going to ruin the fishing, this is terrible and everything. And do you know now where the boats go to get the fish? They go to the rigs.
Right, because
they're
like artificial reefs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get off on that. Back on the subject of hurricanes, Jindal really did a good job. And another thing that he did, which was, back on the idea of the individual, is when the government, FEMA, was not prepared to give generators like he thought, he got on television. He couldn't get a vote, of course, but he didn't ask for a vote. But what he was doing is he's asking the public by telling them what he was going to do. And he said, look, when we're in this kind of a catastrophe, what do we want? We want to get our fast food organizations, our businesses going. We need them going. We got to get McDonald's going. And we got to get these gas stations going because people with generators, including the Gallows, he said, they're looking to get their gas, so we don't have enough generators. I'm going to buy them. And he bought millions of dollars worth of generators, and I don't know how he's ever going to get repaid, but his attitude was, I can't wait around while people, like, for instance, with the tarp thing, where they didn't even have the foresight to have the tarps within the area. And then
another area of rehabilitation...
It takes about 48 hours, I guess, to 72 hours to get a lot of things initiated, like shelters, showers, food, and so on. Well, in this particular case, and this just came out today, the state of Louisiana has a social services department that's supposed to take care of this. Well, if you know a hurricane's coming, and the National Weather Bureau people, they do a wonderful job. They can almost tell us what within, you know, like 50 yards where it's going to hit. And we know about when it's going to hit shore. Well, the social services people should take like 24 hours in advance of that and start setting up shelters and showers and things. Well, this in this particular case, it happens to be a woman who was running this department. She started doing this after the hurricane hit shore. The governor was not pleased with that, and this morning she resigned. They say she wasn't fired, but she resigned. And the governor, he outlined that her downfall was the failure to predict in advance what was going to happen and how to handle it. He's a no-nonsense guy, I'll tell you. So,
I understand that you kind of suggested it a little bit there with the discussion about the tarps, that both you and Governor Jindal have a few choice words for the federal response. You didn't care too much for how FEMA was getting prepared.
No, and see, that's what we conservatives, since this is the American Conservative Party, is you know, our brand, and one of the things is that you can't have too much distance between decision-making and the person that has to make the decision. And unfortunately, what happens with government, and this is why we got to break it down, because to get things down to the local level, whereas Jindal and our mayor and our police chief, they made decisions on the spot, good decisions. Even if they made a bad decision, on balance, the average is always going to work out. but the authority to make the decision resided at a very subsidiary level. And what was happening with the government and the blue tarps is a good indication of it. Yeah, we have tarps in America, but they're, you know, I'm sure they're being used in Texas right now for Ike with Galveston and so forth. But they got them typical bureaucratic fashion. They were had so many in I forgot what town in Texas they were, and they had tentatively said that they needed. That not that they needed. They had allocated, in their view, 25,000 blue tarps. Well, it turned out that we've already used, I think as a few days ago, it was like 304,000 of them. They were not ready. They've ordered more of them. I can go out my front door and I can look at probably 10 blue tarps in my neighborhood. So it's you know, I don't want to, I think what I really want to say is this is an event that maybe is going to put into proper perspective more of a realignment of how government should work. And we need to be reducing, as I say, the distance between the decision makers and the decision. So anyway, that's kind of what... A little wrap-up on our hurricane down here. I don't know, but I'd be happy to answer any questions if anybody, you know, I would like to just make this point so I don't sound like I'm a know-it-all. Frankly, during a hurricane, if you are in an area that is permitted to remain, which in Baton Rouge we were, you basically just get fortified in your home, and you stay put, and you just don't go anyplace. So my perimeter of knowledge is really nothing more than probably a subdivision.
No, but I think you do understand you have access to the local media that, you know, lots of things you're going to hear about in your local media, on your radio stations, your TV stations, that we're not going to hear at even at the state level or regional level, certainly not at the national level. So I think it's important that people understand that, you know, people that are in the middle of these things, you know, are not just looking for government to come in and do things, but recognizing that government does have a purpose in these kind of events, and it needs to be responsible about how it does that.
I agree. In fact, I've always, I call it the, well, I don't want to take credit for the statement. It's really a repetition of what other people have said, but they preserve the internal order, and we needed that. The curfew isn't a good example of the internal order. The continuation of the hospital things were police and National Guard and other volunteers. In fact, I have to throw this in. I'm amused. I know that you're from Wisconsin. In my subdivision, we were handled by Wisconsin. I had told you one time that the trees were being cut down, you know, the ones that had fallen over and everything, they were being cut up by a firm in Wisconsin, but the amusing part is that when the electric company came in to restring the electric lines, and one of them was right behind my house, lo and behold, it was a company from Madison, Wisconsin. So the volunteers from
all over the place.
Yeah, and it's wonderful. In our, you know, when we're through with, I'm sure that Entergy has already sent people from Louisiana over to Galveston. And the coordination of that is one of the functions of government. That's, you know, just organization, the internal order. So I don't have any problem with that part of it at all.
Again, if you would like to call in and join us tonight, the number is 646-652-2828. Sam, you raised a kind of a related point in a posting on the American Conservative Party website about looking for an issue that can be dealt with using conservative principles, preferably American Conservative Party principles, but doing something that
right.
demonstrates conservative principles. I'd like you to talk a little bit about that idea. What is it that you're hoping that we can do?
Well, Tracy, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's something that is close to my heart. You know, I threw out the reason I got on that jag, you might call it, is that I happened to throw out on the website, the American Conservative Party website, a quotation from Barry Goldwater. And of course, I'm an old man, and I go back to the Barry Goldwater days. I live those days, and he's kind of a hero in my mind. He's
kind of a hero to most conservatives.
What, ma'am?
He's kind of a hero to most conservatives.
Right. And so after throwing a few of those words down, it's like getting an old photo album out that you do every now and then. You just happen to see one photograph, and the next thing you do is you find yourself sitting on the sofa and spending hours just going through all the photographs. And that's kind of what happened with the Barry Goldwater. I happened to write that quotation down, and then I reread The Conscience of a Conservative, and lo and behold, I went to Barnes & Noble, and I'm going to answer your question. I'm getting there. I went to Barnes & Noble Sunday, and there's a new book out called Pure Goldwater, and it's a book that they have released of all of his writings, papers that they put together. Where I'm going with this is that Goldwater cemented in my mind something that I had forgotten, and that was, in order to have a conservative party of value, real value, we've got to demonstrate our conservative values. We just can't. We talk about them, but they have to be translated into something. So then I posed that question to myself, and I said, "Well, what are you doing?" And I was thinking of Louisiana, and I said, "What are you doing in Louisiana? You're doing all this talking, trying to get members, but what are you doing? What are you demonstrating?" And I failed. But then it slowly came to me. And the answer to your question is this: I've been working back about 24 years ago, I think. I'm retired now, but I'm an ex-Chapter 11 trustee for the Middle District of Louisiana. And back in the 85, 6, whenever it was, the farmers were going bankrupt like crazy, especially in Louisiana. And I was spending a lot of time with farmers, and I was asked by a prominent law firm in Baton Rouge kind of get some farmers together and try to understand what it was that the problem was causing the bankruptcy. Not that I, was that kind of an expert, but I'd been talking to them long enough. And what I came to a conclusion was that the farmers were not truly organized. It's kind of like the Conservative Party of past, kind of like the Conservative Party back in the Goldwater days when he spoke. You got the conservatives, the blue dogs of the Democrats. You got the conservative Republicans and so forth. It was the same way with the farmers. They just didn't have their own spot. They had the farmers that were working with the Farm Bureau. You got the farmers that are working with the university, the farmers that are working with the Ag Department of the state or the Ag Department of the feds. And they never were really unto their own. Now, some states, that was not the case. But in Louisiana, it's still the case. So I got some farmers together, and we formed the Louisiana Farmers Association. But I must tell you, it failed, absolutely failed. The farmers just could not bring themselves to organize that way. Well,
I think from my perspective, dealing with farmers when I was in California and also here in Wisconsin, they're a pretty independent bunch of people. And, you know, self-sufficiency is, you know, kind of bred into them. The idea of getting together with a bunch of other people to do something, I think it's just, I think that it's, as a community thing, it probably works pretty well, but as an organization, my bet is that it just doesn't fit their own personalities.
Well, that's a good point. See, so what I did, I put it away. I said, oh, well, that's one of those things, forget it. And it's been sitting in my office. After this idea about demonstration, I came to this conclusion, and I'm trying this. And so this is my futile attempt or feeble attempt at doing what you brought up as a question. And that is, you know, I said the Internet has changed. The Internet creates communities. I said, what would happen if I took and created a website using the Drupal, the community forum, and bring back the Louisiana Farmers Association on the basis of, okay, this is yours. It's not me talking. This is yours. I offer it to you, and these are the principles that we're going to operate under. And I with due acknowledgement to the American Conservative Party, the core principles, and I said that this website or this farmers group will be for those farmers who believe in the core principles of conservatism, who want to do unto themselves what needs to be done to shed bureaucracy. I mean, government hasn't done a thing for farmers. If you go back 30 years, the so-called farm problem still has never been solved. So they need to solve it. So I said, well, the Louisiana Conservative Party is going to give you, and it's there now, it's louisianafarmers.com. We're going to give you this website. We're going to build you this website. It's yours. It's a blog-type website. Have at it. And I've got a little bit more work to do on the introductory paragraphs, and I probably will have it done. Well, I want to go camping this weekend, so I probably have it done within the week. So that's my demonstration of one thing to try to bring the conservative principles into some solid format.
Well, I think if it's used for the farmers to get together so that they can work together and help themselves, I think that's an outstanding idea. And I think that's something that, you know, certainly works with our general principles. I think one of the things, in having read your post, and I've made some comments about it on the website, I don't disagree with the general idea that we need to be able to demonstrate conservative principles, but I think it's a demonstration of individuals or small groups that are doing it. I think the idea of an organization stepping up and demonstrating conservative principles is on its face a wrong approach, unless the organization is comprised of people that are trying to work together to do something for themselves. And then I think it's a great idea. So you have given me a good example of what you are looking at, and I think I want to take that idea and, you know, roll it around in my little brain for a little while and see how maybe there are other examples that can be done in a similar way. It's certainly what we're trying to do with the party and the state organizations, so I think the principle is the right idea.
Tracy, let me throw this at you. I also did this, and it's a very small thing, but I have my business website, and it's kind of, well, I think it's a pretty nice website, but I don't do much.
I like it.
Well, I mean, I avoid work right now. I like to just go RVing, but on the website, I've added the Louisiana Conservative Party to it. I've carefully written it so it doesn't come across as some kind of corporate thing. But it basically, again, is a demonstration of what I was trying to say, and that is, if we can get people that believe in the conservative principles, even if they don't want to or don't have the time and effort to actually do something actively, they have resources that they command, which in my case was an example. I said, well, heck, I'll just put a link on my website to say that Gallo Associates, this business, thinks that the conservative core principles are pretty good, and that if you think that way, here's where you ought to go and look at it. And so anyway, I put that in, whatever good that, you know.
I think anytime somebody that thinks that something is positive and they let other people know that it's positive, that's, you know, a good positive thing for the organization and for people that are respectful of somebody else's opinion.
Yeah.
Sam, I want to thank you for joining us tonight.
Okay.
I hope you and your family and your neighbors continue to do well and that the recovery continues quickly.
Thank you for having me and letting me just spout up my piece.
Not
talk
a problem.
To you later.
We'll
Bye-bye.
Talk to you again soon. I want to say thank you again to Sam. He is, for a gentleman of his age and stature, he is a fireball, let me tell you. Our second topic tonight is the ongoing financial mess in the markets. And I want to bring on our good friend, Bill Himman, who is waiting off in the wings, got a chance to listen to Sam. Bill, good evening.
Good evening.
I'm going to kind of go off on a tangent here, and then we'll come back and we'll have a little chat about it. As most of you know, we've had another interesting weekend in the financial markets. No, that's not a misspeak. I actually meant weekend. Several times over the last year, the Federal Reserve and the financial gurus of Wall Street have had emergencies starting on a Friday night and resolutions announced on a Sunday afternoon. Now, I'm not sure when banker hours changed to include the weekends, but given the mess that they are making, I want them to stop. Please go back to Monday to Friday and just leave it at that. This past weekend's folly began actually a couple of weekends ago when the Fed stepped in and, well, actually the federal government stepped in, not the Federal Reserve. The federal government stepped in and placed Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac into conservatorship. The move was made, it was said, to prevent a worsening of the financial crisis from turning into a rout because of the failure of the two big GSAs. Now, if you don't recognize the term GSA, let me give you a short definition. A GSA is a government's attempt to intrude into the marketplace while pretending not to. How much of an intrusion has these two GSAs been? It's estimated that two agencies right now hold more than half of all the residential mortgages in the United States. Now, a 50% market share is pretty intrusive into the marketplace, if you ask me. Now, when the feds put the GSAs into conservatorship, it was kind of risky, but it was a small gamble from the financial markets perspective. Everyone, and I mean everyone, knew that if push came to shove, the federal government would step in and protect investors, even though everyone in the GSAs, in Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and the federal government absolutely denied that they would do that. Yeah, right. So when the push came, the shove was pretty small. My first inclination, Bill, we were chatting at the time when this was announced. My first inclination was the markets were going to take this move and just absolutely tank. Oh,
yep.
Boy, was I wrong. They thought it was a great idea. And maybe my degree in economics means that I'm insufficiently schooled in the realities of today. But you agreed. You figured the market would take a tank too, didn't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I was sitting there prepared to go look at my IRA and say, well, okay, now what do I do? Didn't happen then.
Yeah, it didn't happen then. And I was very, very surprised because it just didn't make any sense to me why the market thought that this was a great idea. Because, frankly, I thought it was a bad idea. Well, to use a phrase of someone we all dislike, don't really care. The chickens have come home to roost.
Yes.
One of the actions taken when the GSAs went under government control was the pretty much wiping out of the common stock. But they also took care of the preferred stockholders. They got reamed too. No more dividends for the preferred stockholders. Now, this is a bad thing, okay, for a couple reasons. First, many of the banks that we've been hearing are having problems with all these bad mortgages are the same banks that hold stock in AAA-rated, organizations and companies like the GSAs. They hold them in their portfolios as a means to maintain the required capital for their operations.
And if I can interject there, Tracy, that is Tier 1 capital.
Which, for people that don't understand that means this is they get their money first after the people that the debt holders are in there. This is important stuff. This is money when dividends are stripped. They don't talk about stripping dividends from preferred shareholders. That stuff is like, the third rail of corporate finance. Don't touch the preferred dividend. And the idea that the federal government would just strip the dividend out of the preferreds, really, really not a good idea. But it seemed like the markets just didn't care. And it was really weird because, one of the things that happened pretty much right away was that preferred stock all across the board went down in price. So you ended up with a two-pronged problem here. Not only were these banks that were holding the preferred as collateral, as part of their capital structure, losing the dividend, which was going to be income that they were expecting, but the price of the capital was going down. The stock was going down, reducing their own capital base even further. I don't think anybody, there wasn't made a big notice of it, but let me tell you, the banks noticed it. And
big time.
When you have, a time where raising capital is tough, and the stuff you already own is crumbling in price, that's not good. And it didn't help one certain firm called Lehman Brothers. It certainly hasn't helped Washington Mutual or Wachovia, both banks that are also being talked about as being problems. The second problem with hurting the preferred capital, that's how banks raise capital. It is the least expensive form and the quickest form to raise capital is for banks to issue preferred stock. Markets love banks issuing preferred stock. Dividends are good. Stock price tends to be pretty stable. But when the GSA's preferred went out there, this made it much more difficult for a bank to go out and raise, capital for itself. And I am absolutely convinced that the problems with Lehman Brothers was tied directly to the conservatorship of the GSAs. So what is the point of this little economic lesson? Keep government out of private markets. Regulation is fine, but putting their little thumbs into the pie is not a good idea. And if you think that they haven't learned their lesson, they haven't. If you haven't heard yet, AIG, which is a very large insurer, an international firm, the size of which most of us don't have any clue about how big it is. It is on the ropes. And last week, AIG was looking to sell about $20 billion dollars worth of assets to raise some capital that it needed because of all the things that have been going on. And I don't understand why this just drove me crazy. Last Thursday, AIG said it needed to sell $20 billion worth of assets to raise capital. By the weekend, they were asking the Fed for a $40 billion loan. Only problem is the Federal Reserve can't lend money to AIG. It's not a bank. People, it's an insurance company. But by yesterday, they were talking about needing $70 to $75 billion. And today the number was up to $100 billion. If they don't have a clue how much money they need, and it's gone from $20 billion to $100 billion in 4 days, let me tell you, somebody doesn't have a clue. But apparently, the Fed thinks that this is a good idea. They're going to loan AIG $85 billion tomorrow. And all AIG has to do is promise the entire company to do it. So when AIG gets their $85 billion, which I don't believe is enough, I think that by the time this is all said and done, AIG is probably going to need twice that. But if they're able to repay, or if they're not able to repay, guess who owns AIG? The Federal Reserve System. I don't know about you, but I read up on the Federal Reserve System a long time ago. There's a book came out like in the 70s called The Secrets of the Temple. Have you ever seen it, Bill?
I have not.
Excellent book if you want to learn about the Federal Reserve System, how it came into being, how it operated, and what the good parts about it were and the bad parts about it were. You know, we don't have a central bank in this country. The Federal Reserve acts in many regards to that way, but it is a private organization. Most people don't understand that. The Federal Reserve is not part of the United States government. It's a private organization. And it is not necessarily beholden to the United States government for its actions. This is the Fed expanding its portfolio. And I can't tell you how bad this is. This is a really, really bad idea. This is the same thing as a doctor refusing to operate because it'll kill the patient. But I'm being told the patient is going to die. Cheerfully says, okay, I'll operate. This is bad. It's going to be bad. It's not going to be a good thing. What's your opinion on AIG, this little goodie that went on today?
I have been following that story, and it was pretty apparent when Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac went down that there were going to be some serious repercussions. So I've been following that story. AIG is one of those multinational corporations that is in a lot of things. I suppose the only good thing about this whole story is that their insurance business, and they're in multiple lines of business. I think what it's important to remember is their insurance business is regulated by each state that they do business in. And they have to have sufficient reserves to pay claims on their insurance products. So you folks that have got variable rate annuities, life insurance with them, you're okay. You don't have to worry a lot. what isn't covered is their business in what's called derivatives. And derivatives are basically a product that got invented so that people, firms, could take on risk that they didn't want to take on that much risk. So they got a third party, divorced from the transaction, to insure that risk for them, or at least a portion of that risk. The problem with that is everybody saw the fees that they were making and the revenue stream that occurred because of that, and they all started insuring each other. Well, once you do that, all it takes is one of them to default, and you have a whole cascading effect, because one default triggers the next one, that one triggers a couple of more, and it's like a nuclear chain reaction. So derivatives weren't the answer, but everybody loved the income stream. I think what happens is AIG is now owned by the Federal Reserve System, or will be by tonight or tomorrow morning, whenever that deal culminates. If the Federal Reserve System can hold on long enough to get through the crisis, there's not going to be any net effect on the U.S. Treasury. If they can't, if there are further cascades, the U.S. taxpayer is on the hook. And that's a terrible state of affairs. Because now you have, in addition to the credit risks that are inherent in derivatives, now you've got moral hazard. And moral hazard is, if I know I have a floor under my losses and no ceiling on my profits, then I'm going to do riskier and riskier behavior because I know that I'm protected on the bottom.
I think it's such an incredibly bad idea, and there's no way this is over. We're not even, this is kind of what I was suggested. You know, some of the people that I read have suggested that we're not yet halfway to the bottom. Others think that, you know, we don't know where the bottom is, and therefore there's no way to tell how far we have left to go. But nobody thinks that we're at the bottom, from it.
Absolutely.
You know, and short of a nationalization of the financial industry, this is going to get a lot worse before we even begin to see a bottom.
The thing that I find so interesting about this is directly traceable back to the CRA. Absolutely directly traceable back to the Community Reinvestment Act. When that first came out, there weren't any teeth in it, and banks said, ho-hum, yep, you're right, you will do a better job, don't worry about it. And then President Clinton came into office, and along with the Democratic Party said, oh, we need to put some teeth in this. So they did. And what happened was, all of a sudden, if you don't get a satisfactory or better rating on your CRA, your franchise is in jeopardy. It can be taken away from you, i.e., they put you out of business as a bank.
Now, you know what? I understand that you need to have a foundation before you can build a house that's crooked.
Yep.
And that's certainly one of the places where it did. My opinion is the entire mess started with the concept of securitization. And that started pretty much right around 2001, 2002, where you could start bundling up these mortgages and create what was, for all practical purposes, stock out of those mortgages.
But Tracy, stop and think why that was necessary. It was necessary.
Well, I know why it was necessary.
It was necessary because banks can only make so many loans until they get more money back.
Right.
The only way to get more money back at that point was to securitize those mortgages. They
right.
did
and
that by selling them to Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae.
But I understand that. But that was the problem. If you don't have securitization, you know, the CRAs can't go anywhere if the banks don't have the capital. You know, it just didn't make it's like, you know, having a train without brakes on a flat and level surface. Yeah, it's a problem because it doesn't have any brakes, but nothing's really happening with it. You know, it's just going to peter out unless you can put some energy into it. But if you put you get that train and you push it towards the edge of a hill and let it start going over the edge, no brakes, big problem. And I think that's what the issue was. CRA may have created a situation where it took the brakes out, but until we actually hit a hill, it really didn't make that much of a difference. But I want people to understand something. Last year, when they said that the worst of the housing crisis had been limited to subprime and that it was under control, not happening. This year, when they said the banks had accounted for all the damage and the worst was over, not happening. And this summer, when they said capitalization was not a problem and the housing crisis was ending and the economy was good, problem hasn't, gotten any better. This is not a surprise. This is what I want people to understand. This didn't come out of nowhere. People have been talking about a problem with the housing market since 2006. The latter half of 2007, I was paying attention to things because we were seeing people in Victoria's practice that shouldn't be having a problem with their mortgages that were absolutely getting killed by them. And that was starting in mid-2007. We were starting to see some pretty serious problems. And it's just been progressively getting worse. So if somebody says, nobody knew this was coming, BS. The financial markets knew this was coming. The Fed knew this was coming. And everybody was pretending that it wasn't coming, so that they didn't introduce an element of panic into the marketplace. Well, people, let me tell you, I don't care what people are saying on TV right now. I'm not really caring too much about John McCain and President Bush's things. There's nothing you can do about it. You can't go to the bank and take your money out and be protected. This is a much bigger systemic problem. People, panic, okay? It's going to get worse, a lot worse. Boy, am I sounding like somebody.
Gloom and doom there, Tracy.
Gloom and doom. Oh. It's not just the financial markets. Credit is tough, and it's getting tougher. There used to be a joke. The only time a bank would lend you money was if you didn't need it.
Yeah.
Over the last 6 or 7 years, the joke was the only time a bank would not lend you money was if you weren't breathing. But if you had a co-signer, that would be okay.
Yeah.
For the next 5 or 10 years, if you don't own a home already, plan on 20% down and a proctologist exam for a mortgage, because it's going to be not pretty, not pretty at all.
Tracy, from my point of view, and just in terms of full disclosure here, I spent 35-plus years in the banking industry. I got to tell you, as far as I'm concerned, 20% down payment is a minimum requirement forever.
Well, let me tell you, in the interest of full disclosure, we didn't put 20% down on our house.
Yep.
We barely put down anything on our house. But in the first year, I built out the lower level of the house and added 3 bedrooms, a full bath, and a family room. And that, we added about 50% to the value of the house when we did that.
Mm-hmm.
And the net result for us was the equivalent of about 35%. Equity.
Yep.
Which
you're the exception
number,
to the rule.
Yeah, but we knew that going in. Before we even bought this house, we knew that that was what we were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't too worried about it. We only have about 5 minutes left, and I want to get into we're not going to get anywhere near into the discussion on the presidential election that I wanted to get into. But there is something that I want to bring up, because the first time I heard it, I just laughed my butt off. And then I started thinking about it, and then I got kind of mad. I was on a blog and involved in a discussion about Governor Palin, and I read this, and I'm quoting, "For all of his good work for women, Senator Biden has been given an honorable vagina." Okay. I'm sitting there like going, okay. After cleaning up all the drink that was all over the monitor, all I can think was, let's see, Bill Clinton was the first black president, and Joe Biden will be the first woman VP. Great.
Cool.
Okay, now, you sit there and kind of go, God, what kind of stupidity is this?
Yeah.
And then I started thinking, how insulting. You know, if Bill
to
was
both
the
parties.
If Bill was the first black president, what would make Obama? The second? And if
Biden were one and a half.
You know,
he's
if
only
Biden
half
were
black.
The first, if Biden were the first female vice president, what would that make Palin? Now, I understand it's one or the other. It's not going to be one
right.
calling the other.
Yeah.
But if the Democrats can't or won't elect a woman or a black man, so they bestow the honor on a white man as a stand-in?
It's identity politics.
I think I'm insulted. Okay?
Yeah. If I were Joe Biden, I would be insulted. As it is, I find it humorous, but that's okay.
You know, I just think if the Democrats can't really elect a black man or a woman,
mm-hmm.
then to call an old white guy a black man
mm-hmm.
or a really old white guy a woman,
mm-hmm.
then you have to believe that both sexism and racism are inherent in those concepts. You know, and they call us sexist and racist. I mean, I just looked at that and went, you can't honestly think that. Please tell me you don't honestly think that.
Who was it that bestowed this award on him, by the way?
I'm going to be nice and not tell anybody where it is.
Okay,
because,
that's fine.
I thought about it. I thought about, posting it, and I thought about, connecting to it. But you got to understand, the site that bestowed this honor,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it was in blazing, huge type. I mean, it was...
Oh, my gosh.
You know, it was just like, this was the greatest honor they could give, and I'm sitting there like going, this is insanity. And it's kind of just an aside, but it's dealing with this idea that, this continuing comparison between, the experience and capabilities of Obama versus Palin. And let me tell you, I think from my perspective,
mm-hmm.
I want to see that comparison continue.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you're going to compare the presidential candidate of the Democrats to the vice presidential candidate of the Republicans,
mm-hmm.
The GOP has, that's a slam dunk. I mean, they'll take that all day long.
Absolutely.
I don't know how Sarah's going to feel about dealing with it all day long, but let me tell you, the GOP's got to be loving every second of that.
Yeah, my opinion is that all of that is going to die down because right now economy is number one, and that is what is going to dominate the headlines, and the news, and the campaign messages, and all of that. These actions by the feds for Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, now AIG, who knows who else later, that is going to dominate, I think.
Well, we have less than a minute left.
Do our cross-marketing.
Cross-marketing, yeah.
Yeah.
I do want to remind everybody, come to visit the website, americanconservativeparty.org. I need to slow down so that I can enunciate a little bit better here. Come visit us. I still didn't get to anywhere near as much as I wanted to get into. I wanted to get into the idea of Obama getting into screwing around with our foreign policy. And I wanted to get into some more about judgment and McCain.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to ask you one thing, one quick word.
Sure. What did
you think of my bumper music starting off the show?
Actually, you know what? I was late logging in and I didn't hear it. What was it?
You'll have to do it yourself.
Oh, man.
Good night, everybody.
Okay.
Talk to you next
week. Good
night. Thanks for visiting. Phil, have a good evening.
You too, Tracy.
We're done.